And welcome to yet another fantastic installment of The Two Brandons. This is Brandon Easton.
And this is Brandon Thomas.
And today is our much anticipated 2013 summer movie preview.
That's right.
The Europeans make fun of Americans because in the summertime, they don't go to the movies. They go to the beaches. But Americans, we go to the movies. And Hollywood has, since 1976 with the release of Jaws, used the summertime as the popcorn movie programming block. Each year, the summer movie season seems to get just a little bit earlier.
Yes.
A few years back, May 3rd became the unofficial start with, I believe, the release of the first Iron Man movie. And some people are saying that with the April 19th or April 18th release of Tom Cruise's film Oblivion, that the summer movie season is actually starting in April. So I'm not including Oblivion in this because I don't consider it a summer movie. Any film released after May 1st, 2013 will fall into the auspices of a summer movie release as far as I'm concerned. Me and Brandon have picked our top five films that we are most looking forward to for the summer of 2013. We're going to say the name of it, who directed it, the release date. Then we're going to talk about the reasons we're looking forward to it. And then we'll discuss how each other feels about that film. So with no more ado, let me begin. My number five most anticipated film of the summer of 2013 is indeed Iron Man 3, directed by Shane Black. Release date is May 3rd, 2013. Now, I am not the biggest fan of Shane Black. And for those who are, you know, action genre fans, Shane Black wrote the script for Lethal Weapon and a bunch of other high-profile, high-concept action films of the 1980s. He also played in the first Predator movie as the guy that kept making sexual jokes. He was one of the people. He had glasses on, and he got killed pretty early on in the film. Despite this, once again, I'm not a big fan of Shane Black, but I am willing to see where Iron Man 3 goes. Personally, I am a bit shell-shocked from the disaster, in my opinion, of Iron Man 2, and I'm not happy to see original director Jon Favreau move on. Now, the thing is, the trailers look pretty cool, but the reality is that's all I can say about it. Pretty cool, quote-unquote. There's no indication of character development, if anything, and it seems that Tony Stark hasn't moved past his issues from Iron Man 2, and those issues from Iron Man 2 were strangely absent during the Avengers film. So it feels weird to me that he's going to go from Iron Man 2 to Avengers and then come back to Iron Man 3 and seemingly in the same mental character state. I personally am not happy to see that kind of development. He seems to still be torn up about something. He still seems to be stuck about something. And I don't know if that's great character interaction or actually character development. Now, the rumor goes that the action in Iron Man 3 is so intense that it has intimidated Avengers director Josh Whedon about finding a way to top it for Avengers 2. If that is the case, I very much want to see Iron Man 3, mainly for the action. I'm hoping, realistically, that they do something with Tony Stark that doesn't seem cliched or boring, just like Iron Man 2. And I really hope they do something with Don Cheadle's character of James Rhodes, who in the comics was a fully developed character during the 1980s, but in the movies, he practically does nothing. And because of that, because of my fear and because of my trepidation about the new creative team and if they can improve on the disaster of Iron Man 2, it sits in my number five spot.
All right. Well, this will be pretty interesting. Let's get to my number five is Elysium. I believe I said that correctly. By Neil Blomkamp, I believe his name is pronounced. And
love that guy.
Yeah, we're gonna talk about it. And do you have the release date for that one? I believe it's sometime in August.
It's August 9th, 2013.
All right, August 9th. So that's kind of heading out of the summer movie window. But for me, my number five is Elysium. And I was not a huge fan of District 9, I have to admit. I think I got into the game a little late on that one. I had heard a lot of terrific things about District 9, and though I did enjoy it, I didn't enjoy it as much as I was expecting to. However, I did respect the artistry in the movie. I think that it had a very interesting visual look, and on top of that, it was one of the few action movies that's actually about something. which seems to be a problem with a summer blockbuster. So I appreciated, you know, the artistry. I appreciated that there was social commentary was a big part of the story. But that's because of how I felt about District 9. That's why this movie sits at number 5 for me and not a little higher. Now, mind you, I did make this list before the first official trailer for the movie was released, I believe, yesterday.
Oh,
and after
yeah.
seeing the trailer, now I feel maybe it should be a little higher, but I wanted to stick with the list that, you know, that I prepped over the weekend. But I think the premise of this movie, I think it sounds superb. Again, it seems like it's a mix of science fiction and social commentary. The visuals look amazing. It seems to have a great cast so far, and I think it'll be, this might be one of those movies that, even though I have it a little lower on my my personal list, there's a good chance that I might actually enjoy this movie more than some of the others that are a little higher up. But for now, we're gonna keep it at number 5. I'm comfortable with that position for it. But I think it's gonna be pretty interesting, and I'm hoping that I love this one like I wanted to love District 9, which I only liked.
Well, interestingly enough, number 4 on my list is Elysium, directed by Neil Blomkamp, and again, it is released August 9th, 2013. And this is a natural bridge because, you know, I didn't notice your number 5 was Elysium.
No, so we tried to keep it a secret.
Yeah. Now, as you know, as Brandon already said, Elysium is a follow-up to District 9 by director and writer Neil Blomkamp, who did a wonderful short film called Alive in Joburg, which is short for Johannesburg. I would strongly suggest anybody out there who is an aspiring science fiction or fantasy creator to take a look at what's going on with sci-fi short films, because one of the entryways into Hollywood, particularly now, is through the production of sci-fi short films. Alive in Joburg is literally the same story as District 9, but it was on a much smaller budget. But you could see within that an incredible amount of storytelling potential. Once again, in Elysium, Blomkamp deals with heavy societal topics in a sci-fi context. And in my opinion, this is one of the best kinds of storytelling. Dealing with social justice and speculative fiction should be the way much of speculative fiction is told, in my opinion. For a very long time, information on Elysium was completely shut down. Only recently has there been a release of information, and I have for you here the synopsis for Elysium, and it is, in the year 2159, there are two classes of people, the very wealthy, who live on a pristine man-made space station that is disguised as a massive floating city called Elysium, and the rest, who live on Earth, a dirty, filthy, overpopulated, stinking, polluted Earth. The people of Earth clearly are desperate to escape the planet's crime and poverty, and they need the state-of-the-art medical care available on Elysium. But the folks in Elysium do not give a damn, and they pass anti-immigration laws to preserve their citizens' luxurious lifestyle. The only man with the chance to bring equality to these worlds is Max Coburn, who is played by Matt Damon. As Brandon said, this is a late summer edition and unfortunately might get buried under the rush of less thoughtful films. But I am going to make sure I see this no matter what, because it is not only a film dealing with sociological topics, but it is yet another original science fiction film not based on pre-existing material.
Excellent point.
And I love the fact that we're starting to see more of these original concepts creep out that aren't based on comics, novels, video games, or other transmedia streams. There's quite a few films coming out in the next 2 years that are high-budgeted science fiction vehicles that are not based on anything else. And I love the fact that we are starting to get kind of a renaissance of original material, and I'm very happy about that. So with that being said, what's your number four?
Number four, Pacific Rim.
Mm.
Guillermo del Toro. this is also another film that has been shrouded in secrecy. I think there's been a little footage leaked at a couple comic conventions, but this is another one that we haven't seen quite as much press and footage on, possibly because it's very effects heavy. But This movie is essentially robots versus giant monsters, which for any sci-fi fan is a definite sweet spot. So even though we've seen very little from this film, I'm incredibly excited by the concept drawings and the posters that we have seen thus far. I'm very excited that Idris Elba is in it and has a starring role. I think he is a phenomenal actor, and I'm happy to see him getting a lot more movie roles. He was in Prometheus for, I don't know, probably like 10 minutes. But hopefully this will be, hopefully in Pacific Rim, it'll be a bit more of a starring vehicle for him. But I think Del Toro as a producer and a director, again, he's a great visionary. Visually, his films are always very distinct. He did Pan's Labyrinth, which I love. He did the two Hellboy films. Maybe we'll get a three, maybe not, but that's the one that I'm going to put at number four. So giant robots and monsters. And, you know, on a personal level, I think that the success or failure of Pacific Rim, I think, will go a long way towards getting a live-action Voltron movie fast-tracked or put into cold storage, depending on how it goes.
You know what? Pacific Rim is not on my list. It's on my honorable mention list.
Okay.
But I do have two personal stakes in the success of Pacific Rim. The first, clearly, is whether or not a mech-based film will do well for American audiences. I think it'll do well extremely on the international level.
Oh, yeah.
But I have no idea how it's going to play in North America, particularly with the giant robot thing. However, if Pacific Rim does well, it might spark a mech renaissance for big Hollywood pictures. So we could not only see a Voltron live-action movie, but we might also see a Robotech live-action movie, one that is already purchased by Tobey Maguire. Tobey Maguire has the rights to make a Robotech/Macross film, but I don't know when they're going to start working on it. But if Pacific Rim does well, it would be absolutely amazing to see that. And the second reason why I would like Pacific Rim to do well is that I have a graphic novel that has giant robots fighting. And if that does well, maybe people will start looking for that kind of material. Who knows? I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm not on the level of Guillermo del Toro, and people are still learning, we're still learning about, you know, the process. I'm still learning about how to get my stuff seen by people in power. But I think that if Pacific Rim does well, you could see a mech renaissance in the same way that the Blade movie back in 98 sparked a superhero movie renaissance. So with that said, let me jump to my number three film on the list, which is After Earth, directed by M. Night Shyamalan, with a release date of June 7, 2013. This is going to be a very interesting film for many, many reasons. This is the first big-budget sci-fi film with two African-American leads who are actually father and son. Then, we have director M. Night Shyamalan needing true redemption for his film career after several missteps that I won't get into now. Third, it is yet another original concept not based on a comic book, TV show, novel, or video game. After Earth is set 1,000 years after our planet has been abandoned by humanity, and human beings resettle on a distant world called Nova Prime. Will Smith plays a military leader from a group called the Ranger Corps, and his son, Jaden, is a mischievous recruit. During a routine mission near the old Earth, they crash on the planet, and the only two survivors are Will and Jaden. The Earth they find is radically different than anything they can imagine because many new species have evolved in the absence of human beings, and these creatures are dangerous because the Earth itself has evolved them to keep human beings away. Now, that's a concept I can get behind. The idea that animal life on Earth operates as white blood cells toward human beings is an amazing concept. Within the story, Will and Jaden's characters have to work together and overcome their differences in order to survive and get back to Nova Prime in one piece. Now, from a market perspective, I have no idea how this film will do because it's going to be released in the middle of an already crowded cinema schedule. And there's always the specter of the black effect, where people will either avoid the movie during the theatrical run or bootleg it to death. And then there's always the issue of the international market not wanting to support films with black leads. Now, although Will Smith has been generally immune to the black effect, there's been rumblings that he's lost a step or two with his popularity and that audiences have become tired of him. We will see how this plays out because if After Earth does well, we very well may see a shift in the perception of African Americans in high budget, large scale science fiction movies in Hollywood.
All right, let me jump in here. We're gonna break format for a second because I want to talk a little bit more about After Earth specifically. After Earth didn't make my particular list, but I am gonna go see it. I share many of the concerns that Brandon does about it. Another is the fact that this summer seems to be packed with movies about dead Earths and with After Earth, Oblivion, and Elysium all coming out in the same frame, it stands to reason that one or two of those movies is going to be left behind, similar to what we saw several years ago when we had, I believe it was Armageddon and Deep Impact released in the same frame, and Armageddon basically ate Deep Impact alive.
Yep.
So I am concerned about that, but as Brandon said, there's a lot riding on this one. Will Smith obviously is one of the most bankable Hollywood stars out right now, and I believe that despite some recent missteps that I think have a lot more to do with his inability to do anything but sequels to older successful movies of his. I think that After Earth does stand a chance to do fairly well, especially given the success that The Karate Kid found a couple of years ago with his son in the starring role. I think the thing that's most problematic is the current trajectory of M. Night Shyamalan, who had made a couple of...
I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. Who made a couple of great movies at the beginning of his career, but has slowly just kind of gone... I don't even know exactly what to say about it, but I've seen, you know, a lot of the movies at the beginning of his directing career and at the current state of it, and I'm just telling you that The Last Airbender was one of the worst movies I have ever seen in my life. And to me, the question is going to be, are people going to be able to overcome M. Night directing this movie to support Will and Jaden Smith? You know, I think that Will and his son are a surer bet than M. Night is right now. And I think M. Night desperately needs not a hit, but a movie that people actually enjoy and don't make fun of on the internet. And right. So to me, his involvement is the wild card for me. That's the thing that makes it very difficult to predict exactly how the movie is going to do. But an original sci-fi concept, two black leads, it's a very, very important movie for me personally, and I think for the marketplace. So I'm gonna see it. I'm gonna support it. I'm crossing my fingers until they crack, you know, right, that it's good. But I mean, I have, for me, one of my favorite movies of all time will always be Bad Boys with Will Smith and Martin Lawrence. And even right, though, by all accounts, it's a terrible movie on any kind of critical scale that you want to look at it through. But for me, I was in high school. I had just started high school when that movie came out. Seeing two black men in lead roles who were both, you know, the movie's a little silly. It's part comedy, part action movie. But I didn't think there was anything particularly buffoonish about that movie. The second one we won't talk about. But, you know, I have very fond memories of that movie, even though it was terrible, just because of what it represented to me personally as a kid in high school that was obsessed with movies and comics and cartoons and wanted to grow up and make them. And it was a very important thing for me to see. So to me, when I think about After Earth, that's the type of stuff that I think about. I think about other kids that were just like me that are, you know, writing little stories and novels and, you know, kind of their own comics, and being able to see two black men, father and son even, in a cool sci-fi movie. So I have high hopes for After Earth, so we'll hopefully it'll work out. Hopefully it'll work out and everybody will look good and M. Night will have a hit and Will Smith will, you know, continue doing what Will Smith does, and hopefully it'll play well internationally, which, as Brandon pointed out, is a big issue when you're when these movie studios are looking at these quote-unquote black films.
Yeah, and to follow up on what you're saying real quick, and I do agree 100% with what you're saying, I think that there's three general levels of film fans or moviegoers. You have people like us on the first tier who give a damn about all those little things that we always talk about. They pay attention to the news of the industry. They know what's going on. Then you have the second tier of moviegoers who kind of pay attention to what's happening. They might watch TMZ, but they don't really follow everything. They go to see a lot of stuff, but they're not really motivated by behind-the-scenes news. Then you have the third tier, which is just about everybody else. That third tier of filmgoers are people who just get excited by trailers and only go to see movies of people they recognize in the preview. So if Will Smith's in the movie, that group of people will go see it because Will Smith's in it. Half the time, they won't even know what the story's about. They'll just go see it because Will Smith's in it. Like, I knew people who went to see Battleship because Rihanna was in it. Not because they liked science fiction or, you know, like they even played the board game. They just wanted to see Battleship because Rihanna was in it. And those people are going to see After Earth no matter what. It's the upper two tiers of filmgoers that I'm wondering if they're going to support it, because there is an element of racism within movie viewing choices with everybody. You know, a lot of people won't go see movies that have black people in them. I know I have white friends who actually are friends of mine, but they don't go see movies with black people in them, and they never give me a real explanation why. They just don't go see them. But if it's a movie with all white cast, they're there on opening night. You know, so it's kind of interesting. So the international market, they kind of fall within all three as well. They generally, the point that studios make is that the international marketplace can't relate to black characters because they make the assumption that black character equals black culture. So the idea that African-American culture is too complex or alien to an international audience is their rationale, if you're wondering what we're talking about when we talk about international audiences. And that's kind of weird because those same international audiences buy a lot of hip hop. So yes. I'm just wondering.
They support hip hop artists that can't even get supported here.
Yeah, exactly. Like in Eastern Europe, Ice Cube is extremely huge. I don't know why, but Ice Cube is extremely huge in war-torn Eastern Europe. So, you know, it blows my mind. But anyway, what was your number three?
My number three, Man of Steel.
Okay.
Man of Steel, I believe that's directed by Zack Snyder, who did 300, Watchmen. He did another movie that I won't talk about because I'll get angry. I'll let you figure out which one that is. And I believe the script is written by both Christopher and Jonathan Nolan, who I believe co-wrote The Dark Knight and The Dark Knight Rises together.
Mm-hmm. And David Goyer.
Yeah, and David Goyer, who also co-wrote Batman Begins. So this one is out. What's the date on this one?
That is June 14th.
June 14th. All right. So this is another movie that there is a lot riding on. Warner Brothers has been making its money, at least as far as comic book movies are concerned, the last few years with the enormously successful, critically acclaimed Dark Knight trilogy. Now, there is a running joke amongst comic fans and probably amongst movie fans, too, that Warner Brothers can't figure out how to sell any type of movie but Batman movies. DC Comics has all of these great characters, and for some reason, they are so far behind what Marvel Studios is doing that in the wake of the success of the Avengers, their first inclination was to try to jump the line and go straight to a Justice League movie without having figured out how to do a Wonder Woman solo movie, a Flash, the Green Lantern disaster. So for Warner Brothers, I think that Man of Steel and its potential success is going to be huge, because if Man of Steel comes out and doesn't do very well, I think that it pretty much smothers Warner Brothers' notions for a Justice League developing franchise. I think it basically chokes them out and makes it almost impossible to accomplish. What works in their favor, obviously, is the presence of Christopher Nolan and his production team that also did the Batman movies. So I think that when you combine that type of modern, realistic sensibility with the kind of the visual eye of Zack Snyder, whose films always look very good. The action is always well choreographed, well staged. I think once you kind of marry those two things together, you have the potential for success. And I think the more that we see from Man of Steel, the more excited I get and the less anxious I am about the potential for this movie to actually come out, be good, and do well. I'm very excited by the fact that Superman will actually punch something in this movie. I know that that was an enormous criticism of Superman Returns, which was essentially, you know, a love letter to earlier films from the 70s, but we can talk about that some other time. But I think that this movie does stand a chance of being very, very well received critically. I think it can make money, and if it does, you know, we are on the train to Justice League town. If not, you know, who knows what's gonna happen. But for Warner Brothers, with you know, they're watching Marvel Studios drown them in movies, and I think that it would be a huge embarrassment for them to produce yet another Superman movie that isn't very well received, while across the street Marvel Studios is producing successful movies around Iron Man and Captain America and Thor, which historically have been, you know, second tier characters until, I guess, at least 5 years ago. But It the more I see of it, the more excited I get. I think they picked a great choice to actually play Superman and Clark Kent. The cast seems extremely talented. I'll be happy to see kind of like a modern interpretation of General Zod and, you know, Superman punching stuff. So I think that's what the people want, and hopefully the movie will deliver and get Warner Brothers on the track so they can make up some of this ground that they've been losing to Marvel, you know, cinematically anyway, for the last several years.
And I'll talk about Man of Steel a little bit later because I need to go to my number two. My number two film on my list of summer movies for 2013 is Star Trek Into Darkness, directed by J.J. Abrams, released May 17th, 2013. Now, this is yet another entry on my list that seems shrouded in secrecy, despite the incredibly high profile of the creative team and of the franchise itself. Star Trek Into Darkness will be the latest entry in the Star Trek 2.0 universe. And there's been speculation about this movie since the middle of 2012 or so, about whether or not Khan was the mysterious villain from the trailer. All we do know is that Benedict Cumberbatch, who is best known as Sherlock Holmes in the BBC reimagining of Sherlock Holmes, you know, is someone with incredible anger towards Kirk and Starfleet. The trailers have been incredibly intense, with scenes of genocide, terrorism, and the Enterprise itself crashing into San Francisco. Beyond the film itself, a lot of attention has been placed on director J.J. Abrams, because he was named the new director of Star Wars Episode VII. Now, some folks have been excited about this, and some folks have been incredibly critical and flat-out disgusted by this development. There are those who believe that Star Trek will take a back seat, as Abrams is a much bigger fan of Star Wars, and there are Trek fans that will swear that the 2009 Star Trek movie was a remake of the original Star Wars, with Kirk taking Luke Skywalker's place in the narrative. Something that I actually do agree with, because he did take the thematic narrative of Star Wars Episode IV, which was the original one, and which is really the typical hero's narrative, and he applied it to the Star Trek universe. Which is why, if anyone has seen, you know, the original Star Wars and the 2009 Star Trek movie, the level of emotional intensity is pretty much the same. And it worked, because Star Trek 2.0 universe did extremely well. Now, this is one of those movie events where the drama surrounding the creators trumps the buzz of the movie itself. This isn't necessarily a bad thing, as I do believe that Star Trek Into Darkness will do monster business and guarantee a third film in the series. However, the future of Trek is once again called into question, as we have no idea what Abrams will do after Star Wars Episode VII. Now, the cast and crew, or at least the cast, have been signed for, I believe, a three-picture deal. So there probably will be a Star Trek III, or technically a Star Trek XIII, but I don't know who will direct it. I don't know if the creative team will still be hanging around, and I don't know what they're going to do with it. One of the things that I would like to see after this movie within the Star Trek 2.0 universe is spending more time in space. This new movie looks like it takes place completely on Earth, with maybe one or two scenes set in exotic locales and with the Enterprise itself crashing into San Francisco Harbor, into the bay. So I'm hoping that we actually get Star Trek and not Star Wars. It's not called Star Wars, it's called Star Trek. And I would like there to be some trekking through stars, because they haven't really done anything except kind of battle around Earth and then have a couple of scenes in space and then planets explode. I would like to see some exploratory stuff. I mean, because even in Star Trek, Star Trek II and Star Trek III and Star Trek IV, there was an element of scientific wonder present. You know, I mean, I don't know if you're a fan of those films or not.
No, but we'll talk about that in a second.
Okay. The Star Trek movies, they all had something a little bit different. The first Star Trek movie was this incredible exploration of what life itself means. A lot of people like to trash Star Trek I, the motion picture, but it is probably the best pure science fiction film ever made, other than 2001 A Space Odyssey, because it is fundamentally challenging and questioning how we conceive of life. It is not an action film disguised as science fiction. It is not a thriller disguised as science fiction. It is science fiction for science fiction's sake. And we don't get enough of that. And I would like to see the new Star Trek cinematic universe kind of get a little bit more toward the science fiction and a little bit less away from the sci-fi action side of things. Now, what's your take on things?
My number two film is also Star Trek Into Darkness. So that worked out perfectly. Now, let me get so much to get into. First of all, prior to J.J. Abrams reimagining of Star Trek. I hated Star Trek. It was, to me, there were, you know how they, how people say that you can't, that you couldn't be a Prince fan and a Michael Jackson fan at the same time?
Right.
Which is not actually true, by the way.
I disagree.
But it's been said. I felt the same way about Star Wars and Star Trek.
I said that sucks.
I felt such a deep attachment and love and appreciation for Star Wars that anytime I saw Star Trek, I was looking at it through the lens of Star Wars. And through the lens of Star Wars, to me, Star Trek looked boring. To me, the future was, everything was very clean. Everything was very nice. The aliens weren't very scary or frightening to me. And mind you, when I saw Star Wars, I was probably, I don't know, 9 or 10 years old. So this is part of my problem with it. But for years, you know, I've seen all these versions of Star Trek come and go, Next Generation, Deep Space Nine. I think there was something else that I'm forgetting. But I've never been a Star Trek fan at all. I've thought that it looks boring, it looks sterile, and it has no lightsabers. And that's pretty much as simple as it was for me for years and years. Now, you know, fast forward to this new Star Trek movie hitting the Earth. And I was already a pretty big J.J. Abrams fan. I have a lot of appreciation for Alias, especially the first couple of seasons of it, which I think are really great. Lost, again, the first few seasons of that and a little at the end. But I was interested in Star Trek because I was a J.J. Abrams fan, not because I was a Star Trek fan. So as someone who doesn't know a lot about Star Trek, about the shows or the movies or anything, it was a great opportunity for someone like me to come into the franchise cold and really kind of experience Star Trek in a new way. And to me, that's kind of what I took from Star Trek. I mean, I loved it. I loved it immensely. I thought it was excellent. I thought the cast was amazing. I thought the pacing was great. I thought the narrative arc, though it was very simple, as most narrative arcs are in, you know, a lot of these movies, I liked the parallels between the upbringing of Kirk and Spock, and I thought it was amazing. I thought it was great. Me and one of my buddies had a conversation about it. He had actually seen Star Trek before I had a chance to, and the thing he told me was, this movie never stops being cool. Just when you think you've seen the coolest thing that's going to happen in this movie, something else happens that's even cooler. So I loved it immensely, and it was pretty clear pretty quickly that there was going to be more after the success of the first one. And, you know, given what is going on with J.J. Abrams and taking the director's chair on Star Wars, I think this probably will be the last kind of modern Star Trek film that he directs. But to, you know, Trek fans out there that are kind of suspicious about where things are going, I fully believe that him and his production company will continue to maintain a heavy hand in the production of anything that goes forward. So it won't be like a hard stop. It'll be more of a soft reboot. I would point to Mission Impossible 3, which J.J. Abrams also directed, which I thought was great. Had a lot of kind of cool Alias kind of Easter eggs hidden throughout. But J.J. Abrams directed MI3, and with the fourth one, Ghost Protocol, the torch was passed on to Brad Bird, I believe, who did a great job with that movie. So I think, you know, Trek fans can look forward to something similar. I believe that someone in Abrams' camp will probably end up taking the franchise forward. But as a Star Wars fan, especially as a, you know, as a kind of Star Wars fan over Star Trek, I was extremely excited to hear that he was taking over Episode 7, which is something that I've been kind of viewing with a very kind of suspicious eye ever since it was announced. And not to say that my suspicious eye is completely closed at this point, but them circling back around to J.J. Abrams and getting him on board, I think, was the right call. And, you know, I think good for him that he gets to, you know, drive Star Trek and Star Wars forward. I know that some people see it as a little unfair, as, you know, an embarrassment of riches on his part. But yeah, to me, the final product is all that matters to me. And I think that this Star Wars film will be great. Or I'm sorry, this Star Trek film will be great. And I believe that the next Star Wars film has a chance of being great because of him in the director's chair. So that's pretty much my kind of my spiel on the whole thing. But I enjoyed the first one. Looking forward to the second one. And since I don't have much familiarity with what's come before, the kind of the annoyance of the is it Khan, is it not Khan is completely lost on me. I mean, I know who Khan is. I've seen, you know, that scene from the end of Star Wars 2, or Star Trek 2, I'm sorry. See, I got Star Wars on the brain now. Star Trek doesn't even exist. But, you know, the is it or is it not Khan, you know, question doesn't really... I'm not very concerned about it. I think at the end of the day, it probably will be Khan. I think it would be very unlike J.J. Abrams if it wasn't. But, you know, I think it'll be great. And I'm looking forward to more lens flares and Star Trek in the Darkness.
Well, I would strongly recommend as an adult for you to go back and watch Star Trek 2, 3, and 4 because they actually form a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that as you're specifically because you're an adult,
mm-hmm.
I think that there are elements of – there are themes of mortality, themes of aging, themes of acceptance in those three films that put them above a lot of the stuff that's being made now. And if you watch them – you know, and like do it in like a one sitting over 2 days, I think you would walk away with a really deeper appreciation and understanding of what Star Trek meant to a lot of people and what it means to a lot of people.
Mm.
As someone who grew up watching Star Trek and Star Wars and loving them both pretty much equally, I had a lot of issues with the 2009 Star Trek movie. Mm. I feel that they captured the basic essence of why these people are important,
mm-hmm.
but they didn't really get to why these people are beloved. And they kind of took Kirk and made him his absolute extreme emotional state, just like they did the opposite with Spock. And they did some really weird stuff with Spock by putting him in an interspecies relationship with Uhura, which is something that never, ever, 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 ever happened in the original Star Trek universe. And mm-hmm. I think they did that for the sake of just shoehorning in a romance for the sake of female viewers, because if the females came to see Chris Pine, which a lot of them did, clearly, then they needed to stay for something that would, you know, kind of keep them interested. And by kind of shoehorning in a make-believe romance between Spock and Uhura, it kind of insulted me as a fan, but it accomplished what it did. I think one of the biggest critiques of the new Star Trek movies by long-term fans is that they just kind of – they're missing a couple of little things here and there about why these characters are important.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully they get to that in the second movie. But I always recommend for Star Wars fans who didn't watch the original Star Trek movies in the 80s and early 90s to just give them a chance. Take a minute or two and look at – particularly 2, 3, and 4, and you'll really understand why these characters mean so much to people. Because when I was a kid, I really didn't like the whole TV show, but I really loved the movies because they kind of they made me a little bit more mature on an emotional level, because there were certain things in those movies which I still remember today, and as I grow older as a person, the issues of mortality and acceptance are becoming more and more real to me. So I think that it's really important for, I mean, I just think genre fans in general should always watch Star Trek 2, 3, and 4 as kind of a initiation into the field. But that's just my opinion. You know, now with that said, let me get to my number one film, which you already covered, which is Man of Steel. The number one movie I'm looking forward to this summer is Man of Steel, directed by Zack Snyder, and is released on June 14th, 2013. Brandon already said it, but I'm going to reiterate it from my point of view. This is the key to the DC Comics cinematic universe, something that has been stalled time and time and time and time again. All the industry rumors I've personally heard suggest that Warner Brothers is sitting on eggshells to see how Man of Steel is received by audiences. If it is well received, it will set up the Justice League film in the future. Now, personally, I don't see a Justice League movie working on the same level as Avengers, and there's a reason for that, because the Justice League characters are just way too powerful, and you really would have to have an incredibly immense situation that defies all logic and gravity in order to make it a threat. Because if you have a superhero team that has Green Lantern, Wonder Woman, and Superman on it, like, really, who's going to stop them? You know, I mean, we really think about it. So that said, I am very interested in seeing what Zack Snyder, Christopher Nolan, his brother, and David Goyer come up with to make Superman a relevant cinematic hero. Of all the heroes, Superman is the toughest to make interesting for general audiences. Richard Donner's version from 1978 was a classic, but they haven't updated the character for the modern world, and the 2006 version simply didn't work because Bryan Singer and the rest of the creative team were too rooted in reverence to the Donnerverse version of Superman. Based on what I'm hearing from advanced screenings, Man of Steel is, quote-unquote, the Superman movie we've all been waiting for in terms of characterization, action, and approach to the mythos. Henry Cavill, or Cavill, is supposed to be pitch perfect in the role of Clark and Superman. And Brandon also earlier mentioned the supporting cast, which includes Kevin Costner, Russell Crowe, Diane Lane, Lawrence Fishburne, Michael Shannon, who plays Zod, and Michael Shannon is also on the HBO series Boardwalk Empire, and Amy Adams as Lois Lane. With a cast like that and a pedigree of the creative team, it would take a phenomenal amount of suckitude to ruin this movie. I've always given director Zack Snyder a pass on most things because he, in my mind, did the impossible. He made a coherent Watchmen movie. Of all the graphic novels I considered impossible to adapt, he and screenwriter David Hayter not only translated the graphic novel into a script, but managed to keep a good deal of the thematic core intact. A lot of people unfairly trashed Watchmen, but I would personally like to see any critic of Watchmen out there adapt the graphic novel better than what they did.
I liked Watchmen a lot, personally.
Here you go. Now, Superman, personally, has been a favorite character of mine for most of my life. I make no apologies for that. In my opinion, there's this kind of superhero hierarchy that's like Elvis and the Beatles. Either you like Superman or you like Batman. I like both of them. I just think that it's high time that a movie captured what the character is really about. One of the best depictions of Superman I've ever seen was in a graphic novel called Superman for All Seasons. I believe, was it Mark Waid or Jeff Loeb?
It was Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale.
And Tim Sale did the artwork. And to me, that four-issue graphic novel series, which was collected, is one of the finest depictions of the Superman character ever committed to print, video, film, whatever you want to call it. If Zack Snyder gets close and if Zack Snyder does what he can do with the action side of things, and Christopher Nolan keeps the character accessible, this, in my opinion, could be the beginning of something huge. And that's my take on Man of Steel.
All right. All right, I guess that leaves it up to me. My number one film, which is... See, Brandon's getting started already. My number one film of the summer is pretty much the first film of the summer, Iron Man 3. Shane Black, Brandon's talked about him in some of his previous work already. Avengers, man. To me, I thought that the Avengers was in a nearly perfect superhero movie. Now, I'm a huge Joss Whedon fan, a huge fan, not a out of control fan. I don't love every single thing that he's ever done, but I love a lot of it. Mm. And once he took over, once they picked him to direct the Avengers, which I believe was in the wake of Warner Brothers, you know, throwing his Wonder Woman script into the shredder. by the way, Warner Brothers, I thought that the Avengers was pretty amazing. I know this sounds silly, but I was enormously proud that Joss Whedon wrote mostly and directed that film after some of the struggles that he's had in the past with getting his work, you know, kind of out there in the mainstream. A lot of you will know Whedon has a very dedicated cult following, but the viewership for a lot of Whedon's shows to us, to the fans of his work, don't match the creativity and, most importantly for me, the heart that I believe is at the core of a lot of his work. I enjoyed The Avengers. I saw it 3 times in the movie theater, and I do not remember. I haven't seen a movie in the theater 3 times happily since I was probably 10 years old. We're talking about, like, the Chipmunk Adventure might have been the last movie I saw 3 times in the theater. Wow. So I adored this movie. I thought it was an appropriate culmination of all of the work that Marvel Studios had done over the years, which was another thing I was very happy to see. This notion that DC was going to try to jump the line to a Justice League movie was it was personally offensive to me. To me, it was the decision from people. It was a decision that tells you Warner Brothers did not understand why the Avengers was really successful. Obviously, you know, you team up a bunch of superheroes, you have them, you know, knocking out nameless, almost faceless aliens with cool effects. But to me, that's not the reason why The Avengers was a success. To me, it was because Marvel Studios was patient and they built their world movie by movie by movie, yeah, until they reached The Avengers, which put them in a position where they didn't have to introduce characters. There were a couple of new characters introduced in The Avengers, but they didn't have to spend a lot of time telling you the origin of all of these characters. Their origins had already been fully formed and developed in other movies, so now they could just tell a story about this group of characters. I thought that the chemistry between the cast was great. I thought that the script was sharp and smart. And I loved it. I loved it to death. I don't think it was a perfect movie by any means. It's hard for me to even really name a quote unquote perfect movie, but to me, it felt perfect. The core of it felt right. The characterizations felt right. Everything felt fairly well earned, and I think it's one of the greatest, most successful superhero movies of all time. That's how I feel about The Avengers. Yes. Now, going to Iron Man 3, I'm extremely excited about it because it occurs in the wake of The Avengers. But more than that, this is also a very important movie. I don't know why. I guess every movie on our list is important for some reason, I suppose. But right. For me, Iron Man 3 is going to be very important because this is going to start phase 2 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And after the audience has experienced the Avengers in the scale of the action, the scale of the destruction, the increased stakes, now Marvel Studios is going to have to basically they're basically going to have to do everything again, because from now on, every movie that they make is going to be compared to the Avengers, whether that's fair or not. So I'm extremely interested to see how committed they are to making these solo movies just as enjoyable as the ones they made pre-Avengers. And it's funny because Brandon mentioned it, the disaster that was Iron Man 2. And personally, I don't think Iron Man 2 was the disaster that Brandon does, but maybe we'll talk about that a little later. However, I think that movie was a misstep for them. And I think for me, the central problem with Iron Man 2 is that it couldn't decide what story it was trying to tell. I think that there are a few kernels of a story in that movie. However, I think that they spent a lot of time and real estate in that movie trying to better set up the Avengers movie. And I think that I would hope that they have learned that the solo character movie has to be able to stand on its own. They can't use the solo movies to set up the next big Avengers movie. They can't, you know, to me, Iron Man 2 is almost an extended trailer for the Avengers. And I believe that's the reason why it was not nearly as successful as the first Iron Man, at least critically. So I'm very interested to see what kind of direction that they're going to take these solo movies into in the wake of the Avengers, because now they have set a bar for people, and I want to see whether or not they're going to try to hit that bar by just throwing more action and more villains at us, or if they're just going to go in another direction, which I'm crossing my fingers on, that they will dig in, they will find interesting things about these solo characters that make them interesting, and just concentrate on telling a self-contained story about this character learning something and turning into someone a little different by the end of it. The other thing that I'm excited about is, for comics fans, Iron Man 3 is going to include some elements of a recent, not terribly recent, I guess last 5 or 7 years, a recent Iron Man storyline called Extremis, which was written by Warren Ellis and drawn by Adi Granov. So I'm also very excited to see that Marvel Studios, that they're mining more recent material for the movies. And I think we're also going to see that going into the new Captain America movie, which is going to be based on or an adaptation of Ed Brubaker and Steve Epting's Winter Soldier story, which for, I'm sorry, spoiler warning, Captain America, his ex-partner,
Bucky,
right, his ex-partner Bucky comes back. He's been recovered by the Soviets and turned into a sleeper agent, and he's been alive all these years, and he reemerges, and him and Cap get into it, and it's great. You should read it if you haven't. But for me, what happens next post Avengers, that makes Iron Man 3 my number one pick for my summer movie preview.
All right, and let me see. I do have a couple of films. No, I mean, I'm not going to, because, I mean, trust me, I understand what you're saying about Iron Man 3. I'm just wondering what the characterization of Tony is going to be like.
Mm-hmm.
Because when I've seen the trailer, it just kind of feels like he's still stuck in the Iron Man 2 malaise.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't like that. Because I figure after Avengers, he would be a little bit happier. At the end of Avengers, he looked real happy. You know what I mean? They drove off with with the Hulk, you know, and they drove off together, and everybody's like, Sharma, whatever the hell that's called. Everybody seemed happy. But anyway, there are movies I'm going to see anyway that are not on my list. One of them is Pacific Rim, which we already talked about. World War Z, Wolverine, and Kick-Ass 2 are also on my list.
Okay. That's
everything for me.
If we're talking about, honorable mentions for me, I believe After Earth, which we've talked about at length. I'm also not super excited about World War Z. It'll come down to what else is out that week, mm-hmm. to see if I make it to that one. But those five are that's pretty much my list. I will see a few other things around those, but to me, those are the five that I'm really, though, to me, those are the movies that I'm going to be there, like, on opening day. Maybe not opening night, because, you know, I'm old now and I can't do midnight showings anymore because I'll be asleep. But for me, that's my list. My list, number one, Iron Man 3. Number two, Star Trek Into Darkness. Man of Steel, Pacific Rim, and Elysium closing it out.
And for me, it is number one, Man of Steel. Number two, Star Trek Into Darkness. Number three, After Earth. Number four, Elysium. And number five, Iron Man 3.
All right. So there you go, guys. When we post this up, hopefully we'll be able to kind of embed the trailers into the posting, too, so you can kind of get a visual for some of the things we're talking about, though there's a good chance that most of you have probably seen the trailers, possibly even more times than we have, though I don't think anybody's seen the Iron Man 3 trailer more than me, but we'll see. That remains to be seen.
Well, and on that note, this is Brandon Easton.
And this is Brandon Thomas.
And thank you so much for joining us, and have a fantastic week, guys.
All right. See you next time.